Oxbow, a U-shaped metal pole or larger wooden frame that fits the underside and the sides of the neck of an ox or bullock. A bow pin holds it in place. Good evening and welcome to Thunderdome Metal Reviews. My name is Gabe Hooper. While the oxbow I just mentioned is not the subject of our discussion tonight, it is an apt image for talking about a band that will be the focus of a discography blast of my design of albums by Oxbow, an avant-garde rock band from San Francisco, USA, founded in 1988. With me tonight to ride the third rail are my friends and comrades, Tracy and David. Ben is spiritually present, but not physically here this evening. How are you, gentlemen?
Wondering what I did for you to subject us to this.
What I need is a I Heart God Oxbow double blast, right? That alternates, that just really...
That's a show that you have to pay money to go see. It just... I don't know. I think that one would test my sanity.
I had never heard of this band. And it's always cool when you bring a new band to us. Or, well, not new. New to me. And at first I was like, I don't know, man. But I also have a very high tolerance bred by punishment like ministry for just random shit. So I don't know. I thought I got into it. I don't know, maybe I was gaslighting myself or Stockholm syndroming myself, which I know is not a verb, but
I want to say I got more into the later albums, but I want to say I think part of it is his first album is just so fucking bad that you just your expectations are so lower that the other three just are good in comparison.
I'm gonna clap back. It's certified an album. It says it. If you look at it, it's an album, Tracy.
It is an album, but it's not a good album.
Not a fan.
No.
Gabe, can you tell us a little bit before Tracy and I continue? Rock'em Sock'em Robots. Can you tell us a bit about your Oxbow journey?
Sure. So I think I first heard of this band when I was living in Charlottesville, Virginia, and I think I might have actually seen them play there live in the late 2000s sometime. And around that time too, I saw a documentary about the band called Oxbow Music for Adults. And that was a documentary that was included on a compilation they put out called Love That's Last. And I had that on CD. I remember that. So I must've gotten my hands on that somehow at a used record store or something. And what I can remember, which is not much about the live experience, was that it was positively electric. Like, it was just such a spectacle and an atmosphere unlike anything I'd ever witnessed before. This is before my sort of weird and like quasi, you know, almost spiritual experience with Amun-Ra the first time. But it was also one of those things where I was experiencing their music, but also the stage presence of Eugene Robinson, who is the vocalist of the band. And it was just so like wire tight, like just electric is sort of what I can think of when I think of what it felt like. The documentary also gives a really good picture into how other people have seen other shows that they've put on. And that I found really interesting. And I think, like I mentioned, that the Oxbow is a good image to kind of describe what it is that they do. Because an oxbow, if you think about it, is how you make a yoke work with, you know, a team of oxen, you know, pulling a plow. And it's like, you've got these huge, huge beasts that are full of power and energy. And the oxbow is kind of there to like guide them where they're supposed to be going. And I think that mirrors a lot of what the band is kind of bringing in terms of an energy, where the compositions are really kind of reining in that really like animalistic sort of energy and like drive in a way that makes it somehow understandable to us, because we can't understand what it is to be an ox in a yoke, right? But you can kind of like, anyway, that's kind of out there comparison, but anyway, that's where they came to me. And I've been kind of following them off and on ever since. Like, I haven't listened to all their records. I presented to you these albums because they're the ones I know best, other than the newest one, which I know better than the ones that I haven't heard before, but not, obviously not that well.
I did not make that face because your analogy didn't work. I made that face because I do have some sense of what it is to be yoked. I think we all do. I think we are all yoked to something. So
Sure, but you know what I mean, like that.
I do.
I think we as human beings, right, we have tamed a lot of our own instincts, you know, and so we're kind of a little bit removed from the experience of like an ox. But
for sure.
I get what you mean, and that's why this music works on some level, I think.
Of course, endless sadness doesn't hurt either, right? In terms of hook on point,
yeah,
just grim. What were you going to say, Tracy? Yeah, I mean, you know, they're just showing you the human experience, man. Tracy's right now. I know, he's like shaking.
He's like rocking back and forth.
I wish we had video in this occasion, because Tracy's clearly needs some sort of intervention.
It's the non-flashbacks are going through my eyes, just like, oh man.
Oh, the thousand-yard stare. So, yeah,
well, I was wondered if you had experience with this. I'd wondered if you're kind of like, you know what, I pulled this off Reddit, we're going in blind across the board, or this is something you knew about going into. So we said something you knew about. So this was a little bit planned, but
I was trying to get better or worse. You're like, oh my God, so part of me thought,
I think
that Gabe is an innocent victim as well, but no.
I think there's no excuse for the first one. Like, I feel like of the ones you could have picked.
This is interesting because, I had heard it before, and I wanted actually Ben to be here because I thought immediately of that first White Zombie record, which is terrible. Sure. This is a first record where they really know what they're doing, and it is on purpose, kind of noisy and kind of chaotic.
Yeah.
We can get into it more, but I kind of wish we had his thoughts on this.
I do too. I'll go ahead and get the details on the first one. Fuckfest released in 1989 through the band's own CFY Records, later on Pathological, Crippled Dick, Hot Wax, and Hydra Head Recordings. The musicians on the lineup is Greg Davis on drums percussion, Tom Dubrov on drums and percussion. It's just A1 and A and B1 and A2 and B2. I'm assuming tracks on side A and B. And the tracks they specifically worked on. Eugene S. Robinson on vocals, and Nico Venner on guitars, piano, bass guitar, production, and arrangements. Klaus Fluoride on bass guitar on Curse. Gibbs Chapman, bass guitar on The Valley. And Adam Cantwell, bass guitar on Hunger. Bart Thurber did recording, and Jim Blanchard provided artwork and design. And yeah, this album is a choice. I feel like this album was
Crippled Dick Hot Wax Records, man. That's where it's at. That's the label. The tweet. Yeah. You know, they were experimenting in San Francisco in the 80s.
Experimenting or just noise. Like, I mean, you literally have what sounds like they just took the recording of a train track for 9 minutes at the very last track and just,
I feel like I'm just that last track is rough. I'm not going to lie. And the whole thing is rough.
This album is rough.
It's raw and uncut.
It's raw. It's like the very definition, like, you know, screw that raw black metal stuff. This is rough.
No, this is like, rough and very much on purpose. And I'm not entirely sure what to do with it. I just kind of bought my head. I was like, okay, I don't know. I listened to it more like the way I listened to jazz.
And I think that's probably a good comparison to it. You're like, okay, whatever. Whatever's happening is happening, I guess. I'm just along for the ride. This album specifically reminded me, if you tried to watch Igor without the video context. Like, that's what it reminded me of. Because, like,
I'm going to inflict more of that on y'all. Anyway, yes.
The lyrical content makes no sense. Like, it just sounds like a drunk Steven Tyler just wailing into a microphone. And so, like,
I love the. This is on Wikipedia. Where is it? The thing about his vocals. On Fuckfest, Robinson howls in a high-pitched, anguished voice somewhere between Robert Plant and birthday party era Nick Cave, although his lyrics sound incomprehensible. Is what the reviewer said. So it's just one of the greats.
Yeah.
Also unintelligible.
Well, I think it's worth saying that, like, you know, this is... Maybe it's not a good album, but I think it's a good introduction to the band, because if you don't think you can handle something like this, you may not be able to handle the rest of it, because, you know, it's a good example of where the compositions are trying to hit you. I think, like, they're weird. They're unsettling is like a really good word to describe what they're trying to do. And it's more about the atmosphere. It's more about making your skin crawl than it is about much of anything else.
Sure.
And, you know, the vocals are always sort of a key part of it. And I think that none of these albums work without it. And I think if you have heard of, you know, if you've heard Einstürzende Neubauten, like if you've heard Blixa Bargeld before, this is like Blixa Bargeld on like a toxic mixture of uppers and downers. Like he's just like kind of all over the place with what his voice is doing. It's not one technique. It's kind of like varying between like crooning and screeching and yelling and moaning. And it's really just super striking. That said, like it's very dissonant. And if you're not in for that, you're gonna hate this.
This is such a, for like coming in blind starter, this is such like a rough pill to swallow. Like it's just like, the fuck did I get into on this? Because I was thinking, like, if I gotta do four albums of this, I'm glad we got a break in recording after this week, because I will need it to kind of like mentally refresh, because I feel like it would have just been almost too much to ask for a four albums of nonstop of fuckfest, which luckily it seems like they decide to not go as batshit insane for the rest of them. Like they still have their moments, but it feels more purposeful. And instead of it being, oh, we can do this, so we just should do it all the time, it seems like everything else in later albums has more of a purpose, as this is just kind of like, fuck it, why not?
I've consumed a lot of postmodern art, and I listen to things like Ministry on purpose, not like forcibly like Tracy. So for me, this was, I don't know, just another experiment. As I said, I really plugged into it the way you do with jazz. I was like, okay, whatever they're going to do in the song, I'm going to do that. I was hoping for a jazz flute solo, but nope, it's a train for 9 minutes or whatever. But I don't know. I think I would have walked away less impressed if we had done this as a one-off, right? Like, as I agree with you, Gabe, as an entree, I mean, this is the abandon all hope ye who enter here. This is the gate warning, the trigger warning at the gate. If we'd not listened to some of those later albums, I don't know how I feel about this band. But with this, I was like, okay, I guess they were Hotten Einen Knall or whatever. They were specially minded at the time. I don't know. There was who amongst us was not doing an enormous quantity of fucking drugs in San Francisco in 1988,
89? I wasn't live then, so I probably would be with them. I mean,
but you take my point, Tracy. Yeah, not with that attitude.
I know. Zygote Tracy not getting high.
Zygote Tracy could have been getting obliterated with Faith No More and Oxbow.
Okay, yeah.
Same scene.
I think same in terms time. Of like door of entry, I feel like Fuckfest is a very rough one to come in on.
Yep.
Like if you're a new fan coming to this band, work backwards.
I would advise that too.
Work backwards. Start with the newest and go backwards.
Another thing this reminds me of is a sort of a sewer rat cross hybrid. It's like Zeal and Ardor. Because Zeal and Ardor has some of these like attempt to get under your skin and experimenting and sort of genre crossing, but nowhere near to this degree. So there was just some sort of overlap there that I found interesting. And I really like Zeal and Ardor. So it was our album of the year, right? Last year, is that right? Or was that 2 years ago? I'm losing track.
2 years ago.
Shit, man. What was last year's?
It was last year. Because We're Through Weapons Beat was 2021. And
that's true.
And Zoo and Ardor was the only one all four of us had on our list. That's why I got number one.
That's probably going to happen this year. I was thinking about that. We don't have to get off on this tangent, but I was like, it's going to be a weird one. Because like Ben's convinced nothing good is coming out at all. You and I are like, woo, woo, woo. Gabe is just, I don't know, spinning with two chainsaws, whatever he's doing. So it's cavernous. Well, it's thunderous. Anyway, I think it's going to be an interesting one. I think we've diverged pretty widely. But as you say, all it takes is somebody that's on everyone's list and bam.
Mm-hmm.
I'm fine with that. So democracy in action. Anyway, that'll be happening soon. So I know it sounds like why the hell you're talking about this, but man, when is this going to play? Early November?
Yeah, roughly.
Yeah, so but not even 2 months later.
Well, speaking of sort of like crossing and like doing things from multiple genres, or at least like sort of multiple styles, what I think is interesting already on this record is the mixture of electric and acoustic guitar, which I feel like is not it's not really a thing in rock music so much.
It's like, not super common. KMFDM and a few other people do some of that shit, but they're also weirdos. It's pretty rare.
And I think it actually kind of works because they're, you know, using it both as like a melody thing and a texture thing. Especially because there's just so much like noise going on here. It's nice to have that variation.
That was one of my favorite things about it, actually, was how effortlessly and how well, maybe not integrated, but it worked, that sort of, as you say, electronic and acoustic, and we're also screaming. We're crooning and screaming.
Yeah. We ready to talk about tracks, or?
Natürlich. Ich bin immer bereit.
I'll go first on this one. None of them.
You have to drink toilet water. Is that what you have to do when it's, well, just cry? All right. Whoops. Yeah, that doesn't surprise me, Tracy. This is like Connect the Goddamn Dots if it were an album. Right? Like, the whole album is that track. Well, I bet Gabe has a higher number.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to notice a theme here. I think that these albums work really well when they're just taken as a whole. I do have to say, from the get-go, their last tracks typically need work. Like, the closer is just kind of like, I don't know, not amazing and kind of not efficient. But I think one of my favorite tracks, this is the Take the Ride. And the Valley, I think, is like really beautiful. It's like the end of side one, just kind of like the heart of the record. And yeah, I also really like Bullseye.
Yeah, I like the middle of the record. I mean, I would say Take the Ride or Get Off It Immediately. Tracy, in hindsight, should have just jumped. So either Get Off the Ride Immediately or just Rat It. But yeah, I really like that middle bit with the Valley and Bullseye. This closer is need some work, but whatever. They don't give a fuck. They don't give a fuck what I think. So.
I used to, when I was studying in grad school, I'd pull some background like noise, like, and one of them was train tracks, like listen to a train going over tracks, like on a car ride, train car, and that's what it reminded me of here in that last track. I was like,
you're riding the rails, Tracy. You're just riding the rails.
Oh, I bet that's what they were doing with this too.
Party like it was 1989.
Yeah. Sounds like it was a little bit triggering.
Yeah, it does. This actually,
Fest was a little bit triggering. It was.
Oops. Oops. Sorry.
Yeah.
Oops.
But you want to know a story that was, or an album that was not as triggering for me? The Narcotic Story.
Really?
Yeah. Because, all right, I'll give some details and I guess I'll kind of go into
No, it sounds like you're already taking it there and I'm okay with that. Yeah. I've already got it pulled up. Do it.
This is their sixth studio album. It was released on June 10th, 2007. Recorded at Record Plant in Sausalito, California, in San Francisco Soundworks. It was released on Hydra Head Records. The producer is Joe Ciccarelli and Nico Winner. I think personnel for this one on bass you have Dan Adams, and so this is listed, Wikipedia's a little odd on this one. Personnel is listed by what they did, like their job, alphabetically. So art direction, Aaron Turner. Bass, Dan Adams. Bassoon, Jarrett Rossini. Cello, Eric Gainsland. Clarinet, Leslie Targoda. Orchestral composition, Nico Venner. Conductor, Carlos Dean. Photographer direction, Gabriela Marks. Drums, percussion, Greg Davis. Engineering, Enrique Gonzalez-Mugler. Jared Warner. Second engineer, voice on track one, Laura Donna Cresson. Flute, Diane Grube and Mary Claire Bristois. Guitars, keyboards, arranger, producer, music, Nico Winner. Mastering, JJ Golden, John Golden. Oboe, Jessica Belter. Oboe solos, Kyle Brookman. Other locations, Monte Valier. Production and mixing, Joe Ciccarelli. Violin, Homer Hughes, Robin Sharp, Sam Smith on track 8. Vocals and lyrics, Eugene Robinson.
Before you say whether you liked it or didn't, I just wanted to quickly get, I'm sorry to pause you, Gabe, why did you skip to album 6? I'm just curious with the logic. The first one is obvious, but...
So near the beginning, I said that these were the records that I know best. The first three are the ones that I've actually heard quite a bit. I haven't heard a bunch of the other ones, but I wanted to get the newest record because I heard that was coming out. And I also wanted to get a good cross section. So we are now almost 20 years out from that first record. The next one that we're doing is like 10 years later. And the next one is 5 years later. So this is like an over 30 year career we're talking about. And I wanted to just get a little bit of a cross section. I think also the ones that I picked, I think have, you know, the latter three, they have more in common anyway. So they kind of hang together well.
Yeah. Sorry about that. So Tracy, why was this one much better for you?
So, I mean, you can tell like almost immediately from the first two tracks, because you have Mr. Johnson, which is a 43 second intro that has like, hey, we're going to set the vibe, because it gives a very like oboe to like a horror feel to it. And then you come into the Geometry of Business, and which in the other one, this would have been like very Jane Doe-ish Converge style, but it's like they're pulled back, they're tamer. It's like just because they can, they don't do it. Here it's subdued, and it's like they do more with less, and that's what then I feel like that's a like a you see that through the back the three albums that we did later, three albums that we've done, is they seem to do more with less, even if they do kind of have some odd instrumentation and arrangements as you're going through it. It's not borderline annoying to be annoying. Like, I feel like Fuckfest is one of those. It's like, hey, we're going to test you and see if you consider it and listen to this. This one seems to be less, hey, as you like to say, less Breckian, like we saw with Code Orange. Like, we're not going to piss you off just because.
Sure.
We're actually kind
of, I was thinking that same shit. Anyway, yes. The fremdung has occurred. Anyway, yes. They are fucking with you on purpose, I think.
It's, yeah, and so, like, these back three albums seem like there's a rhyme or reason why things are done. It's more logically, all of them more logically composed and arranged. Now, I do think it improves as we get further along, because I think that's also they probably get more palatable and less probably like as you see the time span of like, here's the Bat Shit Insanity and Fuckfest and the least Bat Shit Insanity on the final one. And you just kind of see that slide throughout the entire way. But this is a much more easier going to. And I think, I don't know how much it was if I would have heard this like alone in a void compared to like Fuckfest before it. Cause I wonder how much that weighs in like, oh, this is like a reprie kind of idea.
I would say two things. I would say art is not supposed to make you feel comfortable. That would probably be what they would say as well, or some version of that. And perhaps it was a work of divine genius that they made that first album to tape you to the wall and drill you a bunch of times, such that these later albums seem so disciplined and bluesy in comparison. So it was a long game. Like, this is how we're going to get Tracy. Right? Because I bet you were like, hell yeah, actual structure.
I was like, okay. Because like,
Lyrics that I can understand.
I was worried for my sanity after the first album, because I was expecting all four to be like this. It's like, man.
Pain lets you know it's working. Well, good job, Oxbow. Nailed it.
Like, it wasn't like, I was afraid it was going to be another I hate God scenario. It's just like, oh God, make it stop.
I would have had much more trouble with this, but we've done some Neurosis now. We've done I Heart God. Yes, I know that's not the name. We've done all kinds of stuff that, as with black metal, I feel like I've gotten some doses of Iocane powder that have inoculated me against this level of random. But I think on this album, yeah, I loved the blue stuff that was added in here. I'm glad they did not actually make this movie, because it would have probably been a horror show. And it was supposed to be a triptych or whatever. Anyway, there was a bold plans when it came to this album. I read an interview with Robinson. They're like, so was this you? He's like, I mean, or like, why did you change his name? It's like, well, I mean, there's nothing your boss can't find anymore. So it's literally what his response was. So I think he just, you know, was this his nom de plume, man? But, you know, this is a well-worn story in San Francisco, New Orleans, and this very community. So it's a fairly nuanced treatment of it, I think. You know, because sometimes it can be just, I don't know. I've heard the story a lot of times, right? I'm not numb to it, but I want to hear it a slightly different way. And I thought this was.
I think it's also very convenient that this is called the Narcotic Story, and it fits into our narrative of like how we're listening to this.
100%.
Where like the first one is called Fuckfest and it has like no rhyme or reason. It's just kind of like, you know,
close
there.
It's a drop into the brain.
And, you know, this shows some kind of a narrative or some kind of a cinematic thing, like moving you. It has some heavy moments to it, but it's also got like this groove that's very sick and twisted, kind of like It's a really unique listening experience, I think. The strings are really, really cool. They don't feel artificial or overdone. I feel like I want to just push back on the I Hate God comparison just a little bit. Like, that's like so much more performance art than this is. Like, this is really very structured, and that feels a lot more just like throw something at the wall and maybe it'll stick, just because of the structure that the music creates and like the way that it, you know, if you let it, your mind can take you to like the scenes that it's creating, right? It's just like
sure.
very dark and ominous and like chaotic in a very disturbing way. And at the same time, it, that kind of, you know, if you let your mind take that journey, the music will stick its emotional hooks into you. Like, you get kind of attached somehow. So I think that's like, that's art, you know, that's what art should do.
Yeah, I think Neurosis might be the better comparison. I just feel that they explore some of the same shafts of the human experience.
Oh, absolutely.
There's a somewhat similar sewer grade to them, but you're right. There's that, they have very different approaches. And I prefer this, actually, to I Hate God. Or Neurosis, actually.
I think I might go with Neurosis, but that's a whole different can of worms, though. You're opening with that issue that's going on with that.
Asshole.
But I was just kind of saying, like, these, in my comparison for I Hate God and this, is it kind of puts me both in a very similar place of psyche. Like, I kind of like, it's, I don't know, like, I'm the dysfunctionality of them. Like, I can handle some dysfunction, but when it's just like dysfunction is the function, it's kind of like, that's where I kind of like, it's no bueno, it's not fun for me at that point, which according to David means it's doing this job. Right. This is also
doing a job, that's for sure.
it's doing one hell of a job. Look it up. It's an album.
Yep. It is indeed an album. But I do feel like there's more structure in this one compared to Fuckfest. Like, that's not even, I think.
For sure. Yeah.
His vocals are not gibbering nonsense. It's like he still has like bits of it where it's a little less understandable, but like you could tell he's kind of more like actually singing instead of just like shrieking / slurring through vocals. You ready for tracks, or you're muted, David?
Sure. Sorry, I'm muted. I'll just start since I'm dumb and had to interject in that way. I don't know. I concur with Gabe that pretty much all these albums are, you either get on this ride or you don't. Because I listen to this album a bunch of times, listen to all these albums, but I don't think there's anything I would pull off this exactly. I don't know. I feel like the arc of it works pretty well. And how long is it? Not too bad, right?
I didn't say that.
Scrolling up. Yeah, 45 minutes, right? It's not like it's an hour. My God, what was that Limp Bizkit album? It's an hour and 10.
I mean, if Ben were here, he would totally approve. I mean,
it's 45 minutes.
Yeah, you can get through it pretty quick. So I would take the ride on this one.
Yeah, and I'll say, like, this week, I think total four albums combined was like 2 hours and 30 minutes, something like that. So, like, you were in and out pretty quick on the blast, like, when you were listening to them in a row. For me, yeah, I agree. You're either on this ride or you're not. There is no half-ass in this. But there is one track I think is good enough, like, in its own to kind of stand on its own, and that's Frank's Frolic. Like, you don't really need much to kind of to come in off of it. Like, you can kind of just pick that up and go with it. Like, you don't need the album around it. But I also, like, less than kind of need the album around it to kind of set the stage.
This is not a single-driven kind of thing.
Not at all.
Which, you know, is what Limp Bizkit was.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Frank's Frolic is really great. I mean, pretty much all of them, I would say.
Alrighty.
I think that the last track, It's the Giving, Not the Taking, is their best last track of these four albums.
That moves us to Thin Black Duke. For a long time, and just realized that's Duke and not Dude. For some reason, I kept thinking it was Thin Black Dude.
So, change one letter and ruin it.
Yeah, I know. Thin Black and Duke is their seventh studio album, released on May 5th of 2017. Comes in at a brisk 38 minutes and 59 seconds. Your lineup on this album is Dan Adams on bass, Greg Davis on drums, percussion, Eugene Robinson on vocals, and Nico Venner on guitars, vocals, keyboards, composition, arrangement, and production. Additional musicians, you have Philippe Stéphane additional guitars on track 1 and 2, Cal Brookman on oboe on tracks 4, 7, and 8, Oxbow Orchestra Eternal, 16-part brass and strings ensemble. Wonder who's all involved with that. That's a lot of people. And Marco D'Ambrosio Orchestra Conductor. And the producer is Joe Ciccarelli again. So there's a 10-year gap between this album and the previous album.
Yep. And, you know, there were 4 albums between Fuckfest and the last one. This one, it's as you say, yeah, it's the very next one. But man, if they gotten it all pulled together by this point, holy shit. Clearly they've, you know, honed genre hopping and songwriting. And I mean, and I already had decided I thought this was the strongest one before I read any reviews or rankings or anything. And I feel like people feel, you know,
yeah,
it's pretty rare for a band to hit this hard. This is, you know, what, almost 30 years, 28 years of their career, right? Like,
yeah,
we run into this a lot with bands we review, like, what does it mean to be Korn or whatever, Metallica, in year 30? So to just burn the barn down this like this is impressive.
Right. And I feel like they do such a statement in the very beginning, because you have, like, that relaxed whistle, which you would not expect to hear at any point coming to this, like, oh, what is this? And I feel like it sets the tone for this album entirely.
Yeah, that's really interesting and totally unexpected. I'm a little bit torn, because while I think that this is a really cool album, I think that it is a bit more obviously artsy and, like, on the nose and inflated. But for that, it's got some real violence to it. Like, it's a very kind of sneering tone that you get from Eugene. You can hear what he's saying a lot better than sort of the hysterics that he's doing on the last couple of records we were listening to. That can be a positive. There's a lot of drive. It's really terrifying, and I think totally captivating in a lot of the same ways as the Narcotic Story is. One choice that I thought was kind of interesting, and maybe I didn't really always agree with, was using horns. Uh-huh. Like, because in some of the same ways that the whistling is jarring, I think the horns are kind of jarring. But again, it's like kind of playing with your expectations, and, you know, you definitely don't expect it. So, you know, they succeed there, but I don't know. It's maybe just a taste thing.
I kind of enjoy the addition to them, because it actually kind of adds, like David was talking about, you know, going to it like a jazz album. I feel like that adds like a nice little, like, actual, like, full on jazz touch, because I didn't realize it till, you know, looking at the ensemble, that this actually legitimately like a 16 piece, like, orchestral and company behind everything on this. It's like, oh, did not expect that.
Yeah, this ain't Casio, and you can tell. That's the stuff I complain about often when some synths are fine, and a lot of the music you and I both like, Tracy, has lots of sense, but it doesn't sound like this.
It don't sound like it's off of Super Nintendo, just some boo, RPG
boo,
background.
Boo, 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 boo. Beeps and bloops.
Yeah. And yeah, I feel like, as for his vocals, he gets away from drunken, slurring Steven Tyler to just actual Steven Tyler vocals. At this point, like, I feel like if he needed to, like, fill in for a show or two of Aerosmith, I think he'd make a good replacement, which, that's props, I would say.
Yeah, for sure.
If you're trying to be the replacement for Steven Tyler, I suppose. I know.
I'm just going to say, he could probably, like, if Steven Tyler calls him, takes like 1 or 2 days off a show, like two days off on a concert, and that probably, like, more money he ever made in his entire career, like, in that 1 or 2 shows that he's done, like, in a year. Covers all his beers.
Who knows how he would feel about that?
Would probably hate it.
I don't know. I would not presume to know Eugene's mind. But he, yes, I feel he would be
on the stage.
There'd be deep self-interrogation and consideration before dealing with that kind of money. Faith No More fucking hated. I mean, they literally sabotaged their career on purpose, basically, with that second album with Mike Patton, because of how much they hated being on the road with Guns N' Roses. Now, admittedly, that is not a good trial by fire. Like, those assholes are who you go on the road with, but it's not for everyone, and I'm not sure they want it. No. So, anyway, this is idle speculation, so I feel like we should talk about tracks.
Well, wait a second.
Wait a second.
Go ahead, Tracy.
Well, I was just going to say, like, I feel like this is the one where, like, they seem to have, like, much more, I think they've hit full palatability here with the songwriting and stuff, because everything's have, like, a nice little jazz, a little up-tempo for it. Like, nothing's just, like, grading to be graded for grading's sake. I don't know if I can say grading enough times in this segment.
Was it grading, though?
And this one, no, not at all. And I feel like they've kind of, like, they almost have like a hard, much more hard rocky, almost classic rock vibes with like elements of like blues and jazz thrown into it. As that, instead of it being much more of the noise rock jazz fusion behind it, you know, like the previous albums were.
See, I think that's probably one of the things that kind of takes it down a notch for me too, because while I think the musical narrative on this album is more linear and gradual, like the end of it kind of is a tapering off and like kind of slowing down near the end. And it's like, that's kind of aligning with a lot of expectations in terms of, you know, rock music or whatever. And I almost like it when it doesn't do that better. Like it's more sort of exciting and more kind of like, I don't know. Yeah. It takes a turn that is, you know, not the one that's the conventional. So I feel like, yes, it's more palatable, but I think it loses some of the edge.
Is it necessarily a bad thing, depending on what you're looking for, I think?
Absolutely. No, it depends on your expectations and, yeah, like, you know, your taste.
So, like, coming into a void, like, this one and the one that came out this year are probably, like, if I'm over here in a void, that's probably the two you want to introduce to somebody to. Just kind of like, hey, they get a little more crazy on this one. Kind of like slow drip it the rest of the way.
You're like, not how Gabe did it.
No, not the
not hey, how Gabe did it.
Hey, here's Fuckfest.
Dunk Tank. Fuckfest surprise, motherfucker.
But Tracy, would you have been able to handle it if I had started with this? Because it would be out of chronological order.
Yeah, exactly. You would have freaked out, man.
I mean, I could have, because I mean, I do listen to stuff not in chronological order. So, I mean...
Only if it's listening to the truth comes
out. So, the truth comes out.
In my own personal listenings, no, actually, whenever like I'm like, oh, I like this album by a band and I want to hear more of them, I have a list of like bands like that. I'm like, I need to check more of their stuff out. But how many albums I have left to hear of theirs, like 6, 7, whatever. And I'll randomly pick that album, like pick that band. And then I'll randomly pick the album. Like I'll pick one through whatever. And then I'll pick the one I didn't get. And like, all right, this is the one I'm listening to. So like, I'm not going to lie, I did that with Creator, and I got like their 3 worst albums in a row. And I was like, man, what the fuck did I get myself into here? Like, because they had that, because, you know, like when we talked about, they had that mid-90s new metal run that was like, ooh.
Oof. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm fine doing it out of order. Like, it comes to this, it's when it's in short succession. Like, if we would have heard these, like, if you had picked the last 4 albums, then I'm like, hey, here's their first one. I'm like, the fuck? Okay. I mean, it kind of makes sense, but oh God, like I wouldn't have imploded.
Okay. Good to know.
I feel that flow of time is important. So I'm glad Tracy had the full experience only to be able to rise above like Icarus later and escape. This was my favorite of the 4. And maybe it's because it's more palatable. Maybe I'm a poser. Prove it.
You poser.
Poser. That's what I'm known as, David.
I mean, I think it's cool that you liked it, because I wasn't expecting anybody to like any of them. So there's that.
Right. See, it's going great.
I would say, I think probably this is probably the one I like the most as well. I just take the ride, start to finish on it.
Oh, yeah. All these tracks are cool. Again, they don't end album super great, but I agree with Gabe that it's a little bit, you know, tiring, that it just kind of slows down at the end. But on the whole, it's all these songs are good. And again, it's only 38:59. So just under 40 minutes. Noise.
Yeah, just take the ride. I mean, the only song that I think is like, I mean, I think Ecce Homo is okay. And I think that the finish line is like okay for a closer. But I think, you know, it's a good flow.
Yeah.
Is it a hustle on flow?
Oh, yeah.
All right. That moves us into the release in 2023 for this year, in Love's Holiday, released on July 21st. It is 40 minutes and 51 seconds. In the producer's chair is Joe Ciccarelli again, Nico Venner again. The lineup is Dan Adams, electric and acoustic basses, Greg Davis, drums and percussion, and Eugene S. Robinson on vocals. Nico Venner does the guitars, pianos, arranging, and orchestration again. It was recorded at the 25th Studio Street Recording Studio in Oakland, California. Mixed at the Shack, Los Angeles, California. So obviously this is the one that came out this year. You wanted to get some fresh eyes on it and just kind of a fun introduction to him.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just I think this album is also very different than the last two that we listened to, in the sense that it does have the feel of this is an experienced band. It also feels like rock, like it's like very rock music. whereas the other ones kind of feel like it's not quite, you know, you're not quite sure what genre it belongs in. You're not quite sure like where they're even coming from. You have no idea where they're going. So for me, like, yes, it sounds like Oxbow, but it sounds very different.
Agree, compared especially like Fuckfest is one. And then like the last two albums, I feel like they were kind of agree, like they're on a trajectory. And this one, they kind of change it up a little bit. Because I feel like this one kind of reintroduces a little more punk elements that they kind of left by off the last two albums compared to their first album. And it's kind of like attack back towards their previous, to their first album. And so like that's what's like.
Return to form.
Well, I won't say return to form, because I mean, they're not.
I'm
like,
just kidding. I'm sorry.
they're like, here's like a drop of arsenic in your gallon of water instead of just like, here's the full on container of bleach.
It's got some interesting new things in there, you know, fitting for a new album, I suppose. Like, I think that outside of Eugene's vocals, we have some operatic and like sort of choral elements, which are really super nice. Lingua Ignota, I have heard that name before, but she does a bang up job on that one track on this. My goodness. And the other sort of choral bits on there are pretty interesting as well. And I don't know, it gives it a kind of a different and also like kind of lifted up flavor that the other records just don't have. I mean, we talk about like this being some pretty down and heavy stuff. I think that choral bit adds, you know, a little bit of uplift, but maybe that's just me.
No, I agree with you there. And I think it's such a, that song in particular is a nice little touch that it's done on, because it's a much more slower paced song. And it's for this album, I think it's one of the more like regularly song structure, instead of being like, because the first two tracks on this album kind of do tick back towards their Fuck Best days. And this one kind of brings it back down to more of a standardization. And then like her vocals being included with it, I think is just a nice cherry on top.
Yeah, I don't know Lingua Ignota, but it's quite good here. Yeah, this is my second favorite, I think. And I was like, oh yay, some of the punks come back. I don't know. I thought this was pretty successful. And as Gabe said, this is a band that clearly knows what they're doing. And I find this one and the last one pretty similar. I don't know, the evolution is not that shocking compared to if I put Fuckfest next to this. You'd be very confusing. But that's apparently what Tracy needed. You training wheels, oxbow training wheels, a bow for the oxbow.
I do need them.
It's like a yoke fractal, smaller yoke.
I'm just a baby ox, not quite the oxen.
A tiny baby. Well, this one was also 40 minutes. Sorry, go ahead.
I mean, I feel like this is like the last two we listened to are much more coherent in terms of the sort of narrative that's going on there. This I didn't find super coherent again. So maybe hearkening also back to Fuckfest, but I kind of dig that, you know, I kind of dig that coherence. And within that coherence, like the chaos, like I think that, you know, shout out to my man, Nico, like he knows exactly what he's doing in the whole arranging and orchestration department. And he's really finding a, you know, very elaborate structure for the just the emotional wreckage that is Eugene's contribution to the mix. And you see that here too. It's like very beautiful, you know, in addition to having those strong rock moments, in addition to having that kind of punch.
Yeah, and I feel like Nico is like he takes on the role of like this, he's like the primary songwriter on here, and just really kind of like you can see his songwriting improve as these albums have moved along. What'd you think is of like the little acoustic guitars there and the nothing? I'm gonna say nothing, the quotation, nothing. That nice little 28-second interlude there. Just...
Was it wasn't super into it, to be honest.
It's almost like a dream.
But did it cleanse your palate, Tracy?
Always.
For 28 seconds.
Yeah, I feel like they've done better in terms of like their, I don't know, the moments that are free of vocals.
Yeah.
But I guess it's nice.
We ready for tracks?
Yeah, I guess I'll go first. I would say that on this album, the first six are my favorites. So I like Dead Ahead, Icy White and Crystalline, Lovely Murk, with that Lingua Ignota kind of operatic thing going on. 1,000 Hours, All Gone, and The Night the Room Started Burning. I also think that Million Dollar Weekend is really cool. I don't think too much of the ending of this record, and I also, you know, the instrumental, whatever.
I'm going to say The Lovely Murk and 10,000 Hours with the Ghost Hour. Guest Artist is pretty damn good. And Million Dollar Weekend is such a nice, like, ballad almost. I won't even say it to have on here. Like, it's almost ballady. And I feel like
that's cool.
Yeah, and I feel like that's when he's most Steven Tyler-ish.
I want to know how many hours you spent listening to Aerosmith about this past week.
Me? Well, this is true aspiration. He wants to replace him.
He just wants one check. Just one check.
Just one fix.
That too. David?
I would just take this ride. It's only 40 minutes. Again, the ending is a little weak, but most of these tracks are, I don't have a lot to add. I also like the Lovely American to 1,000 Hours, that middle bit, but it's I found this certainly more enjoyable than Fuckfest, which is a sentence I want to say over and over.
That's a very steep bar right there.
Well, that was the lay of the land this week, man. Right?
Yes. Yeah.
Because I always played all four, one after the other. So we always started with double F. I'm like, time for this again. It was nice that we could get through them in less than 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the reasons I think I heard them as many times as I did.
Yeah. Well, we ready to grade this?
You can always, Sean.
Yeah.
All righty, Gabe. Your poison.
Okay. So I think as far as the debut album, this one kicks the dick off of White Zombies first. So it's going to get a B from me. I actually really enjoy it, as noisy as it is. And I think it's got enough melody in there that I can kind of maybe look past some of the rough edges of it.
I'm going to come down, but not a lot. Because, as I said, I kind of got into it too. And I like the later stuff. I'm going to give this a B-. Here comes Tracy. I see it in his eyes. Mm-hmm. He's about to shoot a man down the street.
Shoot a man down the street. And regards for Mr. Lindsay not being here. I'm going to pay my respects to him and just say F Hoster shows up and guns him down.
Kind of F we talking about. Like, a 55.
I'm thinking like a 45. Just a,
oh shit. All right. Well,
wow.
Because there weren't really much for me.
You're entitled to your opinion.
Someone's committed to grade deflation.
The dean got to Tracy. The dean was like,
yeah, he must have paid Tracy.
The dean pulled me aside and said, look, you need to bring your grades down or you're gonna be out of a job. So here I go.
He saw those 92s Gabe gives and was like, no.
Tracy's average sinks down to an 83.
Indeed.
So,
oh man, yep. So that was our, so that was an F. Understood.
That was an F. That is an average of 70.
Ah, it's passed. Yes.
Would you buy this album, gentlemen? I think I would not.
Nah, I did, and I would.
You did, and he would. Do it again.
So I am not against paying respects to. So for Narcotic Story, I'm going to give it a C+. It's solid, not my cup of tea, but it is better than Fuckfest, and it's at least not unintelligible mess.
It is better than Fuckfest, and I think I liked it more than Tracy. I'm going to give it a solid B, 85.
Well, this is my favorite of the bunch, and I think it's great. And it just gets better pretty much every time I listen to it, so it's a 95.
Nice.
That gives us an average of 86. Would you buy, gentlemen?
Yep.
I might, actually. It's usually my cutoff is B+, but I'm a bit of a completist. Maybe. I'll spoil it. I would buy the next two.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of the next two, David, what would you give?
I think it's the most strongestest. I'm going to give it a 90. I'm going to give it my A of the night.
I'm not far off there. I'm going to give this a 93. I don't like it quite as much as the Narcotic Story, but I think it's very well done and really, really scary.
Spooky, so scary.
of the ones we've done tonight, this is the only one I feel like I will come back to. And in fact, it's the only one I will be. I put it on my playlist to get back to eventually, whenever that happens. I've been trying to do that since 2019. It hasn't happened yet. But so I'm going to give this a B+ at an 88.
Woo wee.
I know. I mean, it is a 91. This album goes to med school.
Hell yeah. I would buy this.
I'd buy this one too. Like, if I was going to buy one of the bunch, it'd be this one.
Hell yeah.
Gabe, you want to finish us off with the new one?
Sure. So I have taken this for a couple of spins by this point, and I think it is good, but it is really not on the level of Narcotic Story or Thin Black Duke. I think it's still very good, though. I enjoy it a lot. It's a 90.
I think it also has a hair weaker than the Black Duke. I'm going to put this at a B+ 88. It was my second favorite. Because that's how math works.
I'm going to kind of split the difference between Narcotic Story with me and Thin Black Duke. I'm going to give this a 83. So a B-.
Okay. I would buy it.
Yeah, sure, I'd buy it.
Our average is an 87.
It's probably more than Gabe was expecting, it sounds like. And I don't know what Ben would have done.
We don't know what would have happened if Ben were here. And I think, you know, he might have, you know, tried to bring up the thing of, is this metal or not? And I would say by judging by his own rules, he would probably say it's metal enough, or at least metal adjacent.
Yeah, it's a line they play with, definitely. The bigger question is, would he have enjoyed Fuckfest or not? Would that have been a bridge too far?
I would think it's totally hypocritical for him to like that White Zombie record and not this.
Like, but see, the White Zombie record gets a pass because it's been in part of his life since he was like 16.
I understand that, but it is trash. it is unadulterated trash.
But that is literally a quarter century of his life, though. So, I mean, you got to think about it like that.
Yeah, but he even had to admit that it was trash to himself.
I don't know.
It was very difficult for him to do, and he couldn't do it for like a whole decade or whatever.
It's trash, but it's his trash.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Amazing. Which
we've all been there before, right?
Dude, you're going to get Rob Zombie and Glenn Barnes teamed up together.
Yeah.
Decapitate us on Halloween. Just bring it on at this point.
Indeed.
And Dean Martin's coming for Tracy.
Indeed. Obviously. I'm going to need more of those apps immediately.
Yeah, stat.
They're coming
We got a noise rock, you know, quadruple feature coming up for Tracy. We just reviewed Negative Land albums.
Oh, man.
What do we got coming up? Speaking of Negative Lands, what's coming up next, Tracy?
Next coming up is a blast of my doing, and it is Baroness with Blue, Yellow, and Green, Purple. Well, actually, no, I'm gonna change that up. It's Baroness. I don't know what I'm gonna pick on here yet, but it's gonna be Baroness. I can't decide between Purple and the Red album. So
I get it. I'm pumped. I like that band for a reason.
All the colors. Yeah. Colors. Just put all the rainbow in there.
And spoilers, we're actually doing their album that came out this year at the end of the year for my pick of album might have missed. So we're going to get 5 Baroness albums out of this before it's all said and done.
I listened to that album, so it's good.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Yeah, it's going to be fun.
I have no idea what I'm in for, so it'll be a whole new experience.
On Thunderdome Metal Reviews.